to All Right in Sin City, a podcast about writers and writing in the Windsor-Detroit region. Your podcasters today are
Irene Moore Davis, author, educator, and local historian.
Kim Conklin, Windsor-based writer and filmmaker.
And me, Sarah Jarvis, former bookseller, publishing rep, and literary festival chair.
Our featured guest today is Miriam Wright. Miriam Wright is an associate professor of history at the University of Windsor. She teaches Canadian history, and her recent work has focused on race and sports in Canada, as well as on Chinese immigration to Newfoundland and Labrador. Miriam is one of the researchers behind the award-winning Breaking the Color Barrier, Wilfred Boomer Harding, and the Chatham Colored All-Stars Project. Her new book, released by Wilfrid Laurier University Press in fall 2023, is Sporting Justice, The Chatham Colored All-Stars and Black Baseball in Southwestern Ontario, 1915 to 1958. Welcome, Miriam Wright.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. You've been researching the Chatham Colored All-Stars for several years now. How did you first become acquainted with the story of this team, and what was the spark that launched you into the process of researching them?
Well, I first heard of the team actually from the Essex County Black Struggle Research Society website. They had a little feature of local Black history, and there was a picture of the Chatham Colored All-Stars there, and that was the first I'd ever heard of this team. And I kind of forgot about it. And then some years later, back in 2015, I went to Chatham for a history event. I was department head at the time, and the history department had decided to sort of honor local history. We created an award to give out to community groups that were doing great things in the community. And so I went to Chatham to give an award to another group in Chatham, a group who had created a website on local veterans of World War I and World War II. And during the presentation, I talked about websites, because this was a project that was on the web, and I just talked about how the internet had really changed the way that all historians can do history and can reach new audiences and you get more accessible to a public we might not necessarily meet. And so I didn't think sort of much of it. We finished the talk, and I went back, and we were having coffee and cake. And a woman who was part of that organization asked me. It turned out her name was Patricia Harding, and she told me that her late father-in-law was Wilfred Boomer Harding, a member of this team, the Chatham Colored All Stars, and that she had a family scrapbook. She wondered if we could. If we could help create a website. And I said, sure. And so when I got back to Windsor, I contacted Heidi Davis and Dave Johnson of Lady Library. And from there, we basically began this project. We thought it was going to be small at first. We thought, oh, well, make a little website. We'll hire a student over the summer, and we'll digitize the scrapbook and, no, that's about it. But it escalated into something so much more, and I think in a really good way. I think one of the reasons that it became bigger is that from the very beginning, people that were speaking with families of the players and the Black Historical Society was that there needed to be an oral history, right? That the scrapbooks were great, full of newspaper articles, but that's only part of the story. We needed to bring in the voices of the family. And so that's how it all began, and kind of escalated into the website, and continued to evolve after that. We did a comic book, we held a symposium, and also other people sort of took up the story, people in the community. The Chatham Kent Black Historical Society have their baseball game every year. He has been inducted into the Canadian Sports Hall of Fame. So it really kind of, so it escalated from there, and that's sort of how the book sort of came after the public history, after things had settled a bit, and you started thinking a little bit more deeply about the project. That's how it started.
So for those who don't know the whole story, briefly, who were the Chatham Colored All-Stars and why were they so significant?
Okay, well, the Chatham Colored All-Stars were a Black baseball team from Chatham in the 1930s. Now, there have been Black baseball teams in Chatham for a long, long time, but what was different about this team was that in 1933, they were accepted into the primarily white amateur baseball league. The Ontario Baseball Amateur Association, the OBA. And that was new. And when they moved into this sort of forum, they were sort of moving into sort of a different space, right? They started moving into this sort of white world of amateur baseball. And so they played a couple of years in this league, and then in 1934, they actually won the provincial championship. They won the city league. They were part of a city league first, and then they were sort of advanced in this very series and won the whole provincial title in 1934. So that was what's significant about them. They were the first Black team to sort of make it that far. There were certainly other Black teams in Southern Ontario, and there were others in the league at the time, but they were to win. That was so significant about it. And I think they continue to be the only Black team, I think, to win a baseball game.
Outside of Chatham's Black community, why do you suppose the story of the Chatham Colored All-Stars was overlooked for so many years?
Well, mostly, I think, because of racism and the way that history has been told for generations. Until about 40, 50 years ago, all history was primarily about white men. You know, it was military history, it was political history, and so many other people that make up society were absent, you know, including women, including working class people, indigenous people, and Black people. And so those stories weren't told. That began to change, you know, again, about 40, 50 years ago, with the introduction of women's history and working class history. And gradually, Black history began incorporated into both sort of the curriculum and also sort of wider public understandings of history. I think that the wider sort of perception of Black history in Canada was that, you know, that there was a little bit happening during the Underground Railroad. So the Underground Railroad stories were told, Harriet Tubman and so on. But then they kind of faded away, and it's as if Black people sort of disappeared and they didn't exist after that period. And so it was only recently that the Black history has become a little bit more well known, and certainly a lot more is being written, particularly over the last 20 years. And that's been really exciting, both 19th century stories and 20th century stories, going right up to the present. And I think that again, the story of Chatham Colored All-Stars really fits into this larger kind of build of Black history, and that's really kind of exciting.
Fortunately, the Chatham Colored All-Stars have been getting more attention and recognition in no small part due to your work. In your acknowledgments, you refer to how gratifying it has been over the past few years to see so many people engage with the history of the Chatham Colored All-Stars and the history of sport in Chatham's Black community. Your book takes a different approach than some of the other writing that's been published about this topic recently. Can you share a little bit about how you've presented this story and why that felt like the right approach?
Yes, well, a lot of the more recent writing on Chatham Colored All-Stars has focused on the 1934 championship, which is good. That's important. It's a very important story. And it's a good way for, you know, a broader public to connect with the story of the Chatham Colored All-Stars. That, you know, I think it kind of pulls in lots of important themes. But, I'm a social historian, right? And we like the big question. You know, we all sit there and go, well, 1934, well, how did they get there? You know, why was there a Black team in Chatham in 1934 to begin with? Where did they come from? And also what happened afterwards? What kind of an impact did they have within the community? And so it meant I began doing more research, and as I began to do it, really found a story that was much richer, I think, much richer, deeper than I'd ever really thought at first. So that's what sort of led me back in time and also forward in time. So it sort of took me back from 1934, looking backwards, looking at this larger, older history of Black baseball, because yes, a team emerged in 1934, but you know, who, you know, how did they get there? Who were their role models? How did Black baseball emerge in that community, and where was it coming from? What did they do? Look back at earlier teams, and particularly, I think what's particularly important is these older teams from the 1910s and the 1920s. There's a Black team in Chatham called the Chatham Colored Giants, and there were teams in Buxton, London, and so on. And they were really kind of creating this sort of a rich baseball culture and sort of interest in baseball, both among the Black community and also I think with the white community. And I think Chatham Colored also, in many ways, kind of came from that. So I had to tell that story too. I was also interested in looking at what happened after the 1934 win. What was the impact of that? And what I saw, I think most particularly, was a team that was over the years, like they played until the end of the 1940 season, a team that was becoming much more confident, much more sort of adept at dealing with amateur baseball, but also more importantly, team that was more willing to speak out about unfair treatment, about things that went right, about racism. And most importantly, they were even going to the press to get their stories out. And that, I was really struck by that. This was, to me, that was a really remarkable and important story. And as you start looking at that, you start looking at, well, were other groups within the community who were also becoming more active in addressing racism and dealing with inequality and inequity and so on. So in many ways, that story sort of connected to this broader story of a community, a community living in racist times. How did they respond to that? How did they develop strategies to survive? So it became linked to that. And then, of course, follows into the years after they disbanded. Those men went on to the white teams and helped to integrate local baseball. They also created new Black teams when there was still racism, still difficulties for young Black players. So it became a much larger sort of intergenerational story. To me, that was what I wanted to write. That was the story that I wanted to tell.
Fascinating. In your research and writing, the sources on which you relied most heavily were newspaper accounts on one hand, and on the other hand, oral history interviews with former players, the families of former players, or community members who had been there. The oral history interviews tell us so much more than simply what happened on the field. When you were conducting those oral history interviews, what did you find most striking or surprising?
Yeah, well, there were actually sort of two sets of oral history interviews that we used. Some were older oral history interviews that had been done back in 1980 through the Ontario Black Historical Society and the Multicultural Society of Ontario. And they had local people interviewing Black members of the community, and they interviewed some members of the Chatham Colored All-Stars who were still alive at that point, and family members. So that was a sort of a collection I drew on, plus ones that were part of our project. So there were, I think about 16 or 17 interviews that we did. Plus there were some interviews that we did, I think in 2018, we interviewed people who were not specifically talking about the All-Stars, but who were talking about Black, sort of the Black sports community in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. So I drew on sort of all three sets. And what I found most striking amongst all of them, a pattern that I saw in all of them, was a sense of values about when they were talking about these Black teams. So whether they were talking about Chatham Colored All-Stars or whether they were talking about the teams from the 40s and 50s, they were saying things such as, we admired them because they stood up for themselves, or because they gave back to the community, or because they didn't have anything handed to them, they you know, they didn't ask for anything, but they, you know, found ways to sort of make it work. Or because they would say something like, you know, they looked good, or they kind of, you know, they were successful family men, you know, who were, sort of exuded their personalities on the field, you know, sort of this model of successful, you know, respectable Black masculinity. And so that was it. Like they were people that were doing the interviews. They're telling more about themselves. Like they were telling about what they valued. And of course, a lot of these things that they're talking about a baseball team, but they're also talking about things that were important in a Black community for survival, you know, in a racist environment, you know, being community minded and sticking up for yourselves and, you know, being respectable. These are whole things, you know, broader kind of advice, kind of values that would have been important to a Black community at that time and that place. So in many ways, they're telling us about the ball players, but they're also telling us about them and what it took for them to survive in that.
Speaking of those families, many of the people that you discuss in the book still have descendants and family members living in this area. How have they been reacting to the book since its release?
Yeah, families have been a sort of a big part of this project from the very beginning. In fact, it began, through the Harding family. And it's really kind of been, it's really been exciting to be able to connect with them as this process goes on. Like some of the family members actually read the book, it's still in its back room. So I was able to get feedback from them then. It's been really kind of exciting. I've, had launches in different places where I was able to reconnect with some of the family members in Chatham, in Buxton, and in London. It's been kind of exciting. I've had some letters from people, just saying that it was, they enjoyed reading it. They've been quite supportive. Even got a thank you letter from Peggy Jenkins. I'd sent her a copy of the book. It's really cool. But yeah, that's really one of the best parts of it, this process, particularly during the launch, being able to connect with people again. But, some of the families we're quite close to, and I'll be sort of connected with them for the rest of my life.
Sporting justice has entered the world at a time when many important and courageous conversations about equity and inclusion are taking place in our society. In light of that, what do you most hope that readers will take away from this book?
Well, for me, I really want people to realize that activism, fight against racism, is everywhere, both in the past and in the present. In the 1930s, it may seem like small things, but they were really, I think significant. Doing little things such as, writing a letter or going to the newspaper and saying, we're not being treated fairly, something needs to change. That was really, really significant. And we tend to think, when we think about activism, quite often we think about sort of the big movement, the big organization, or the big gestures. But no, this was happening everywhere. It's happening in the community. It was happening in the churches. It was happening. People would be writing letters or maybe making inquiries about why they didn't get a job or why there were only Black women or there were no Black women working as telephone operators in Chatham in the 1940s. All these little things were happening. And I think the story of the 10 Code Ulcers is part of that, right? It is part of that broader kind of environment where people on the ground, ordinary people are doing so with it, little things. They were happening. And the 10 Code Ulcers story is part of that. And I hope that people are able to see the connection, right? See the connection between past and present. Look at the connections between the Chatham Colored All-Stars standing up themselves in the 1930s and, Colin Kaepernick or Kirk Flood back in the early 70s, baseball player who kind of stood up for, for independence in negotiating contracts and so on. So there's, it's everywhere. And I think that's what Chatham Colored All-Stars story and hope will make people realize.
Wonderful, wonderful work. Would you like to read from some of your book for our audience?
Absolutely. A few short paragraphs, basically from the conclusion. And the first one is a quote from Wanda Milburn. Wanda Milburn was the younger sister of several of the Chatham Co-Author players. And she was one of the women who were interviewing former members of the Chatham Co-Ed All-Stars for this project through the, you know, the Multicultural History Society of Ontario. And so this quote actually comes from one of the interviews where she was interviewing one of the former members of the All-Stars. Okay, so I'll just start. In a single sentence, Wanda Milburn captured the essence of the Chatham Co-Ed All-Stars history when she said, quote, "The All-Stars were a colored ball team who played in the Depression years and who made history, who had a lot of fun together and a lot of trouble together too," end quote. As the younger sister of three members of the team, Milburn witnessed many events discussed in this book. She celebrated that the team, quote, made history, but she also knew the price they paid to do it. Saw firsthand the challenges the Black men faced in the 1930s as they navigated their way through the years of the white amateur-based community. She herself had experienced the racialized and class-based society that limited her own opportunities for recreation and after-school jobs. Milburn, who was involved in sports herself in those years, was aware of both the fun and the trouble were part of the experiences and the history of this team. And, so she really nailed it all together, you know, the larger significance of this team for, community in that time and in the years that followed. Also, it's kind of interesting. I think she's one of the unsung heroes of the story because she and Vivian Chavis, together were doing these interviews. And, you know, in a lot of ways, she broke all the rules of, you know, what, you know, oral history interviewers were supposed to be doing. You know, oral history interviewers supposed to be, you know, neutral and not sort of interject too much and sort of be sort of in the background, but she really engaged. You know, she knew the story. She'd seen a lot of the events. She jumps in and, you know, prods the people she's interviewing a little bit, you know, getting them to speak. And I think that, you know, the richness of those interviews really owes a lot to her. But yeah. So that's why I wanted to share her story and sort of alert, readers to her and to those interviews. They're really quite wonderful. You know, I really haven't seen the light of day too much. You know, they were done back in the 1980s, but they kind of got shelved away in an archive and haven't really, you know, been out in the public very much. The other paragraph that I want to share is really the last one. It kind of just pulls the story together a little bit. Perhaps the most powerful reminder of the significance of baseball in Chatham, North Buxton, Windsor, and London in the first half of the 20th century is the way that the history of this team and other Black teams in the community was revisited and shared through scrapbooks, oral histories, newspaper interviews, and commemorative acts. Besides these acts of memory, the way people spoke about and described the teams and the players offered insight into how they fostered and reflected on the experience, large experience of living in a racist world. That included the discussions about lost opportunities in sport, which recognized the systemic racism that affected their lives. It also included the former players and community members describing what they valued and admired in the team, whether it was players who, quote, stood their ground against unfair or rough treatment on the diamond, or a model of heterosexual Black masculinity embodying competence, respectability, and community-mindedness. More than just fond memories of a well-loved baseball team, the way the former players, family, and community members memorialized and spoke about them hints at the way baseball heroes offered hope in hard times. It also suggests the deeper values that also led Black people in the region to organize for greater civil and economic rights in the years when the Chatham Co-Ed All-Stars were playing and in the decades after. The players themselves, being part of the All-Stars, gave them a space to seek Canadian sporting justice. They did not always get it, and a fully equitable, inclusive sporting environment remains elusive in Canada today. The history of Black baseball in southwestern Ontario, however, offers a window into how ordinary people playing and watching baseball envisioned a different world.
Such rich history that you've helped to uncover. Thank you for joining us, Miriam Wright. The new book published by Wilfrid Laurier University Press is Sporting Justice, The Chatham-Colored All-Stars and Black Baseball in Southwestern Ontario, 1915 to 1958.
Thanks for joining us. Look for more episodes of All Right in Sin City wherever you listen to podcasts, or check out our website, allrightinsincity.com. For information and announcements of new podcasts, sign up to our email list or follow us on Facebook and Twitter.